Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
South Africa purports to come to this court in the lofty position of a guardian of the interest of humanity. But in delegitimizing Israel's 75-year existence in its opening presentation yesterday, that broad commitment to humanity rang hollow.
Defends itself against accusations of genocide at the International Court of Justice in the second day of historic hearings. We'll go to The Hague to speak with Raji Sarani, the renowned Palestinian human rights attorney whose own home was bombed in Gaza. And we'll speak with an Israeli Jewish Knesset member calling Israel's assault on Gaza a genocide. But first, in a move many fear could trigger a broader regional war, the U.S. and Britain bombed Yemen repeatedly last night.
This represents an escalation to the ongoing war in Yemen, which started in 2015. The U.S. had been bombing Yemen essentially through Saudi Arabia and the UAE. But of course, the causes are different, the reasons are different this time, but it represents the same policy of escalation and resorting to bombing rather than ceasefire and diplomacy.
We'll get the latest. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United States and Britain have launched dozens of strikes from the Aran Sea targeting Yemen in a move many fear could trigger a broader regional war. At least five people were killed. The strikes targeted areas in Yemen controlled by Houthi forces who've been attacking Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea to protest Israel's bombardment of Gaza. So far, the Houthis have not killed anyone aboard the ships, but the group's actions have disrupted a key global trade route. In a statement, President Biden said, quote, these targeted strikes are a clear message that the United States and our partners will not tolerate attacks on our personnel or allow hostile actors to imperil freedom of navigation, unquote. President Biden's the fourth U.S. president in a row to bomb Yemen. Houthi officials have vowed to retaliate against the strikes and continue targeting Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea until a ceasefire in Gaza is declared.
We say to all countries, to Asian countries like China and others, we say to European countries in the West, we say to everyone in the world, there is no problem for you to traverse and pass through the Red Sea. The only targets exclusively are ships linked to Israel.
The Houthis, who control parts of Yemen, are seen as a member of the Iranian-backed Axis of Resistance, a loose-knit group of forces in the region that also include Hamas and Hezbollah. Meanwhile, in Washington, President Biden's facing pushback from some lawmakers for bombing Yemen without congressional approval. In a message on social media, Congressmember Rashida Tlaib said the president's violating Article 1 of the Constitution. She went on to say, quote, the American people are tired of endless war. At the International Court of Justice in The Hague, Israel rejected claims by South Africa that it's committing genocide against Palestinians. On Thursday, South Africa demanded an emergency suspension of Israel's aerial and ground assault on Gaza, which it said was intended to bring about, quote, the destruction of the population of the territory. Earlier today in court, Israel accused South Africa of distorting the situation in Gaza.
If there have been acts that may be characterized as genocidal, then they have been perpetrated against Israel. If there is a concern about the obligations of states under the Genocide Convention, then it is in relation to their responsibilities to act against Hamas's proudly declared agenda of annihilation.
On Thursday, pro-Palestinian rallies were held in South Africa as the ICJ began hearings. Many South Africans praised their government for supporting the people of Gaza.
South Africa is very brave to have done what it's done, and I'm hoping that this does not work against us as a country, but really it works to ensure that Palestine, the people of Palestine, get the justice that they deserve.
In more news on Gaza, the NGO Save the Children says more than 10,000 Palestinian children have been killed by Israel's assault. That's 1% of the total child population in Gaza. At least 1,000 children have lost one or both limbs. This comes as doctors warn conditions inside Gaza's remaining hospitals continue to deteriorate amidst Israeli attacks and dwindling supplies.
Today, the area around Al-Aqsa was hit. All ambulances were destroyed. We even started to run out of medical supplies. And sadly, we have cases we can't do anything about. We have nothing to offer, so we feel completely helpless. This is very sad and bad, to be honest. We hope that any side will be able to at least ensure the ability for the medical staff to work.
The Intercept has obtained documents suggesting the U.S. Air Force sent officers to Israel in November to help provide intelligence, including satellite data, to help Israel pick targets to bomb in Gaza. The document from November 21st references the deployment of an air defense liaison team to Israel. Craig McIver, a former U.N. official who resigned over the war in Gaza, said the Intercept's report is, quote, more evidence of U.S. complicity in genocide. Here in New York, Donald Trump's $370 million civil fraud trial wrapped up Thursday with Trump insulting the judge overseeing the case and accusing New York Attorney General Letitia James of persecuting him, saying she should pay him for what he called a political witch hunt. As the extraordinary courtroom scene unfolded, Judge Arthur Engoron, who had denied Trump's request to deliver his own closing statement, instructed his lawyer to, quote, control your client. Attorney General James spoke to reporters outside the courthouse.
This is our last day in our case against Donald Trump for persistent and repeated fraud, illegality. This case has never been about politics or personal vendetta or about name calling. This case is about the facts and the law. And Mr. Donald Trump violated the law. And as you know, the judge has already found that he, in fact, violated the law for repeated fraud over a period of years.
In Ohio, a grand jury has refused to indict a woman who was charged with felony abuse of a corpse after having a miscarriage at home. 34-year-old Brittany Watts was then treated in the hospital where a nurse called the police after Watts said she had to dispose of the contents of her miscarriage. She was criminally charged 2 weeks later. She'd been refused abortion care prior to her miscarriage. Brittany Watts spoke to supporters at a rally Thursday.
I want to thank my community, Warren. Warren, Ohio. I was born here. I was raised here. I graduated high school here. And I'm going to continue to stay here because I have to continue to fight.
The Abortion Fund for Ohio said, quote, we're grateful for today's decision, but remain livid at the circumstances that brought us here. Ohioans, especially Black women, fear for their lives and freedom during pregnancy, pregnancy loss, and abortion. It's unacceptable. We deserve so much better, and we demand it, they said. The Federal Aviation Administration has launched an investigation into Boeing and whether the company failed to ensure its 737 MAX 9 planes were safe following last week's incident in which a cabin panel blew off during an Alaska Airlines flight, causing the cabin to depressurize. The FAA has since grounded the MAX 9 pending inspection of the aircraft. Meanwhile, passengers from Alaska Airlines Flight 1282 have sued Boeing for injuries sustained during the ordeal. In related news, The Lever is reporting Republican presidential hopeful, former Boeing board member Nikki Haley, helped quash a proposal to compel Boeing to be more transparent about its spending. The measure sought to uncover whether Boeing's lobbying led to more lax regulations in the wake of two major crashes in 2018 and 2019 in Indonesia and Ethiopia, which killed all 346 people on board. The Pentagon's inspector general says the Pentagon has failed to track some $1 billion in military equipment provided to Ukraine for its fight against Russia's invasion. The weapons in question include javelins, Stinger missiles, night vision devices, and one-way attack drones. This comes as the White House said Thursday U.S. support for Ukraine, quote, has now ground to a halt, unquote, amid stalled negotiations over a new funding package that congressional Republicans are demanding be conditioned on further militarizing the U.S.-Mexico border. In Taiwan, voters are preparing to cast ballots Saturday in a high-stakes presidential and parliamentary election that's being closely watched by China and the United States. Three candidates are in a tight race to succeed President Tsai Ing-wen, who is not eligible to run again after serving her 2 4-year terms. The election could help decide whether Taiwan continues to assert its autonomy and strengthen ties to the U.S., moves closer to China, or takes what one candidate calls a middle path. And a retrial is underway on the Greek island of Lesbos for 16 rescue workers who helped save the lives of refugees who crossed the Mediterranean Sea in 2015 and 16. Greek authorities have accused the aid workers of crimes, including espionage, and what's been slammed as the criminalization of humanitarian work. Just this week, at least three migrants died after their boat sank off Lesbos. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United States and Britain launched dozens of military strikes on Yemen on Thursday night, raising fears of an escalation of conflict in the region. The strikes were carried out from land and sea and targeted areas controlled by the Houthi rebels, leaving at least five people dead. The U.S. says the strikes came in response to the Houthi attacks on ships in the Red Sea to protest Israel's assault on Gaza. President Joe Biden called the strikes, quote, a clear message that the United States and our partners will not tolerate attacks on our personnel or allow hostile actors to imperil freedom of navigation, unquote. Calling the strikes barbaric, the Houthis said the group will continue targeting ships heading towards Israel and that the strikes, quote, will not go unanswered and unpunished, unquote. At least four oil tankers have diverted course from the Red Sea following the overnight attack. Yemen's been targeted by U.S. military action and bombings over the last four American presidencies of George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, now Joe Biden. For more, we're joined by Shireen Al-Adimi. She's a Yemeni-American assistant professor at Michigan State University, a non-resident fellow at the Quincy Institute, joining us from East Lansing, Michigan. Professor Al-Adimi, we thank you for being with us. Can you first respond to the British-U.S. attacks on Yemen last night?
Thanks for having me, Amy. These attacks are not unexpected. The U.S. has resorted to violence and bombardment in the past. Certainly, they've been part of the coalition that has supported that has bombed Yemen and enforced a blockade, enabled an air blockade for the past several years since 2015. So this represents, I think, a continuation of that policy of escalation, a policy of resorting to violence and bombardment rather than doing what most American people have been asking President Biden to do, which is ceasefire, calling for a ceasefire in Palestine against the people of Gaza and making sure that, you know, the people of Gaza don't have to pay the price for the actions of Hamas on October 7th. And so I think instead of working with the Israeli government to end the what, you know, South Africans and others are calling genocide against the Palestinian people, we just see an escalation of these of hostilities in that region.
Can you talk about what the Houthis are doing in the Red Sea? What ships are they going after? And what has this meant for trade there?
So they are controlling Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which approximately 13% of global shipping goes through. So anything going through Europe, through the Red Sea, goes through Bab el-Mandeb before it gets to Sina and the other way around as well. And they have been targeting any ships that are headed toward Israel, either Israeli ships or ships that are targeted headed towards Israel. And they've been very clear about why they're doing this. They're doing this in support of Palestine, in support of the people of Gaza. And they have repeatedly said that all of these attacks toward these ships that are either Israeli or going towards Israel will stop once the Israelis stop their war in Gaza, and specifically actually preventing the food and medicine from entering Gaza. So essentially using a naval blockade in the Red Sea to prevent the blockade against civilians in Gaza. There's also, last week they announced that this was also in accordance with their obligations under genocide prevention, Article 1 of genocide prevention, which says that states should have an obligation to prevent genocide. And so that's what the Houthis have been saying. That's what Ansarullah have been saying. And the U.S. has mobilized troops in the region to defend shipping, global shipping, essentially, and specifically the Israeli economy. So the coalition they put together, I think it's called Operation Prosperity Guardian. And so we have more troops, more U.S. Presence in the region in the last few weeks in order to protect the waters from these Houthi attacks.
I wanted to talk about the response in Britain and the United States. Responding to the attack, U.S. Congress member Ro Khanna, who represents Silicon Valley, California, in Congress, said on social media, Biden needs to come to Congress before launching a strike against the Houthis in Yemen and involving us in another Middle East conflict. That's Article 1 of the Constitution. I will stand up for that regardless of whether a Democrat or a Republican is in the White House. Section 2C of the War Powers Act is clear. POTUS may only introduce the U.S. into hostilities after congressional authorization or in a national emergency when the U.S. is under imminent attack. Reporting is not a substitute. This is a retaliatory offensive strike. Of course, POTUS is the president of the United States. And similarly, Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister of Britain, is facing opposition questioning, demanding he come before the British Parliament to explain why he did this without authorization. Professor Adeyemi, your response.
Absolutely. There are laws that prevent U.S. presidents from, I mean, the entire the Constitution itself, and of course, the War Powers Act of 1973, they prevent presidents from just going and launching airstrikes, launching war without congressional authority. They don't have this authority. It's not an imminent threat. The Houthis were not attacking the U.S. They were preventing shipping toward Israel. They had, you know, this is not a defensive war by any means. And so not informing Congress of this is a violation of the Constitution. And we know Biden himself understands this, of course. There are some tweets going around from 2020 when he was criticizing Trump for having gone to or, you know, potentially attacking Iran without going to Congress, saying that no president should do this without congressional approval. And this tweet that you read coming from Representative Ro Khanna is especially important because Ro Khanna, along with Senator Bernie Sanders, led the, you know, War Powers Act, War Powers Resolution in Congress in 2019 when they directed Trump to end hostilities in Yemen. And at the time, essentially refueling Saudi ships and UAE refueling Saudi planes was considered an act of war that the president had no authority to go to use without congressional approval, let alone direct U.S. strikes like we're seeing right now without congressional approval. So again, it's not defensive, even if President Biden chooses to frame it as a defensive war. This is an offensive act. This is a breach of Yemeni sovereignty. Multiple cities, multiple provinces were attacked last night. There are casualties. There are people who have been killed. We don't know how many yet. And why escalate to such levels of violence when, you know, the ask was clear, work towards a ceasefire, end the suffering of the Palestinian people. And U.S. interests here are commercial. You know, this is a defense of capitalism in a sense as well. And yet we see President Biden resorting and Rishi Sunak resorting to such degree of violence and escalation instead of resorting to diplomacy and ceasefire.
And as we speak, we're showing live footage from Sana'a, the capital of Yemen. Thousands of people are rallying against the strikes. Shireen Al-Adeimi, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Yemeni American assistant professor at Michigan State University, speaking to us from East Lansing. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, Israel defended itself against accusations of genocide at the International Court of Justice in The Hague, in one of the biggest cases ever to come before the United Nations High Court. South Africa accused Israel of acts of genocide against Palestinians and demanded an emergency suspension of Israel's aerial and ground assault on Gaza. A decision on that request will probably take weeks, though the full case will likely last years. Israel often boycotts international tribunals and UN investigations, calling them unfair and biased. But this time, for the first time, they attended the hearing, sent a high-level legal team to defend against the accusations of genocide. The two-day hearings at what's called the Peace Palace in The Hague began Thursday, with South Africa laying out its case against Israel, saying its three-month assault on Gaza is being conducted with the intent to bring about the destruction of Palestinians as a group. Israel defended itself today against the accusations at the hearing. Israeli legal adviser Tal Becker criticized South Africa for accusing Israel of genocide.
The applicant has now sought to invoke this term in the context of Israel's conduct in a war it did not start and did not want. A war in which Israel is defending itself against Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and other terrorist organizations whose brutality knows no bounds. The applicant has regrettably put before the court a profoundly distorted factual and legal picture. The entirety of its case hinges on a deliberately curated, decontextualized, and manipulative description of the reality of current hostilities. South Africa purports to come to this court in the lofty position of a guardian of the interest of humanity. But in delegitimizing Israel's 75-year existence, in its opening presentation yesterday, that broad commitment to humanity rang hollow. And in its sweeping counterfactual description of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, it seemed to erase both Jewish history and any Palestinian agency or responsibility.
For more, we go now to The Hague, where we're joined by Raji Sarani, the award-winning human rights lawyer, director of the Palestinian Center for Human Rights in Gaza. He left Gaza in November after his home was bombed while he, his son, and his wife were in it. He's part of South Africa's legal team in its genocide case against Israel. Raji, we spoke to you at home before your home was bombed, when Islamic University was bombed right next door, then right after your home was bombed, then when you made it to Cairo, Egypt. Now you're standing at The Hague, where this historic hearing is taking place. Can you talk about the significance of it? You were there in the Court of Justice when Israel said it is not committing genocide, and South Africa has no right to allege that. Can you respond? We hear the protests all around you. Hundreds of pro-Palestinian marchers are there.
Hello?
Raji, go ahead.
Hello, Amy. Do you hear me?
We hear you perfectly.
A few days after the Israeli attack on Gaza. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Raji, we hear you perfectly. Just speak. It's We're going to go to a break, and then we'll come back. We're talking to Raji Sarani, well-known human rights lawyer, won the RFK Human Rights Prize years ago. We'll come back to him standing outside The Hague, where hundreds of pro-Palestinian supporters are holding up Palestinian flags. Stay with us. By the Democratic Yemen Youth Union Band. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. An historic trial, or rather hearing, is taking place at the International Court of Justice in The Hague. I want to turn to another clip of the Israeli legal advisor Tal Becker, who talked about the October 7th attack by Hamas, saying Israel had a right to defend itself.
First, that if there have been acts that may be characterized as genocidal, then they have been perpetrated against Israel. If there is a concern about the obligations of states under the Genocide Convention, then it is in relation to their responsibilities to act against Hamas's proudly declared agenda of annihilation, which is not a secret and is not in doubt. Astonishingly, the court has been requested to indicate a provisional measure calling on Israel to suspend its military operations. But this amounts to an attempt to deny Israel its ability to meet its obligations to the defense of its citizens, to the hostages, and to over 110,000 internally displaced Israelis unable to safely return to their homes. Madam President, members of the court, the hostilities between Israel and Hamas have exacted a terrible toll on both Israelis and Palestinians. But any genuine effort to understand the cause of this toll must take account of the horrendous reality created by Hamas within the Gaza Strip. Madam President, members of the court, the nightmarish environment created by Hamas has been concealed by the applicant, but it is the environment in which Israel is compelled to operate. Israel is committed, as it must be, to comply with the law, but it does so in the face of Hamas's utter contempt for the law. It is committed, as it must be, to demonstrate humanity, but it does so in the face of Hamas's utter inhumanity. It is respectfully submitted that the application and request should be dismissed for what they are, a libel designed to deny Israel the right to defend itself according to the law from the unprecedented terrorist onslaught it continues to face, and to free the 136 hostages Hamas still holds.
We're joined now At the Hague by Diala Shamas. She's a senior staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights. In November, CCR sued President Biden, accusing him of failing to prevent genocide. Diala, thank you so much for being with us. I know it's very noisy outside. There's a major pro-Palestinian rally outside the International Court of Justice. This is historic. This 2 days yesterday, South Africa accused Israel of genocide. Today, Israel defended itself. Can you talk about their major argument, saying this is an existential battle? They are simply engaging in self-defense.
Thank you for having me. Yes, it really is a historical moment, and I would prefer to start with yesterday's argument just the significance of what we heard yesterday and what we saw yesterday and what all of these people that